In this week's podcast, we'll be talking about real-world research versus current data world. Marketing firms have been testing metadata and what it means for the physical condition of the consumers for decades. Yet, we consider the barriers too large and outcomes too small for real-world research. So how are the retail and marketing industries using large sets of real data to determine outcomes, outcomes based on the health and well-being of a populace, whilst we in the healthcare industry struggles to gather, analyse and deliver results from the use of real-world research? It seems to be an old problem, yet we seem to be fearful of using the data. So that will lead us to introduce Mark Lukowski. Mark, over to you. Who are you and why are you interested in this topic?
Yeah, I'm Mark Lukowski. I'm a serial entrepreneur. I've jumped around between retail, advertisement, marketing, physical security, high-level IoT systems, and most recently I've dived into real-world research, mostly because of the challenge, and it seemed like there was a real opportunity to make a difference and make a change here.
So question for you then, how is it and that these marketing companies, you know, and I'm thinking Facebook, et cetera, even LinkedIn, Google, all of these companies have our data and they use it. And all we do is tick a tiny box somewhere and consent to it. Yet for real world research, we seem to have to jump through major hurdles to use the same data. Did we go wrong somewhere?
Yeah, I think a lot of it just has to do with precedence and practice. Yeah, every time we go on to Facebook, we're agreeing to their terms and conditions and their policy agreements, and we're basically reasserting new contracts. And, you know, you see these pop-ups come up all the time. Something has changed, and they want to make sure that they got your express permission for one little piece of data to be able to store that somewhere. When it comes to real-world evidence, especially with inside healthcare, I think that there is a very much of a hands-off or a fear around not only gathering data on any sort of scale that the software companies are very much used to, but even just in the practice of going out there and getting the initial permission, it seems like that there's a very lengthy process. That's
my question. If you look at what we have already in the Google and other digital worlds, if you had the power to change things in the healthcare industry and real-world research, what would you do? What would you suggest?
I think you need to turn the cereal box upside down in order to get the prize. I don't think that we need to be, or we should be, opening up or going through the processes that industry says that we should. I think that we need to be attacking the problem from the side and saying, okay, how are we going to get the data that we know is valid and credible in a method that where that data is already being collected that's also ethical? And there's a lot of ways to do that without having to go through the long slog of getting the sign-offs of the individual. So if you're, an easy example would be maybe you're a drug company and you know to a certain confidence the psychographic of the population that you're serving. Is there a way that maybe you can pair up with one of these social networking companies to get the data that kind of crosses with that demographic that's fairly highly representative, and then be able to use that data in a targeted manner, either geographically wherever you're serving, to provide some sort of insight to a certain degree of confidence. It's techniques like these that I don't think are even being explored at this point. I think that most of the companies within the healthcare industry feel like they need to go out and do the old study. They need to, you know, get the sign-offs and permissions and find your cohort. Well, just the same way that marketing companies don't really know to a precise degree who they're serving and who's reacting, you can get around that confidence that you're targeting the right sample by having a large enough sample that is just close enough. So that's this one idea just off the top of my head that I feel like healthcare companies should be exploring, and I haven't seen any evidence that they're tackling the problem this way.
I suppose people listening to this will then say, yes, that's all great. This is all kind of socially available data, but this isn't private health information, which is what we need for our studies. Would you argue that that's the case or not the case?
You know, that's an interesting question. If that was the case, then I would ask, you know, how did Target's algorithm merely a decade ago or a little bit over a decade ago? It seems like, I feel like I'm getting old here. How was Target's algorithm able to, in one famous case, understand that one man's daughter was pregnant, and then not only understand that to a certain high degree of confidence, but then start serving his daughter ads that were only particularly necessary for those that were pregnant or expecting, right? Somehow Target was able to get enough data, but get that data in a way that didn't actually specify the exact target of the person, but understood the purchasing behavior and tied that purchasing behavior in terms of the food, the state of life, all these other pieces of metadata, and to a high degree of confidence say, yes, this entity or this person, without knowing who it is likely pregnant. Marketing is already doing that, and they're doing it in a way that doesn't infringe on privacy. So I would have to, you know, I turn the question back around and say, okay, there's evidence that this is already being done. Why hasn't healthcare even attempted to do something like this?
All of these industries that process data have to comply with GDPR, whereas healthcare seems to be the risk-averse one that is using this as an excuse not to access the data almost, rather than an enabling piece of regulation that protects both the consumer and the producer. So, yes, it's a weird one. Okay, so I'm also thinking along the lines of one of the things that is now almost accepted is e-consent for clinical research. And there was a big push back against this because it was argued that you couldn't verify that that signature came from that person, which to me doesn't seem to make a lot of sense given that we use the equivalent of e-consent every day when we use our banking cards, et cetera. Do we not, surely?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
That wasn't a question, but the question is, do we not use this every day and is it robust and verifiable?
Yeah, I think it's just another excuse. Yeah, as you said, that we already use second or third degree, token logins for banking and other, you know, high cost things. And I think that that window of excuse of e-consent's not good enough is also is closing fairly rapidly, at least inside of the U.S. on a state by state basis. We're seeing the quick adoption, and thanks to COVID, an accelerated adoption of all sorts of services from notaries. To even judgments within inside court cases. So, I think that healthcare industry, I think that a lot of the executives that are running these studies and have enough concerns, especially when it comes to liabilities and obligations, that whenever you give them an out for not taking an activity that could potentially add a liability, they're going to take it. But yeah, I think that window has to close pretty quickly here.
Well, yeah, I saw today. So today for everyone is 7th of October, 2021. Connecticut is implementing cybersecurity and data privacy legislation or more. What made me laugh is in order to have cybersecurity legislation and to comply with it, you first need to be on the net and actually do things in a technical manner. And I reflect back on healthcare and think, you know, 10 years ago, we did everything via paper. But 10 years ago, we still had our phones. And when did the first Apple Watch come out? Was that 10 years ago? I don't know.
I think it was about a decade, a little under a decade.
And the reason I'm bringing this up is there seems to be a disconnect between what we do in our daily lives, even the people that are the researchers that have all of this mobile digital technology. And then we seem to turn off the digital technology side of our brain and go back to paper and really basic stuff for clinical research. So in that process in itself, we've kind of biased the data, surely.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I would say that at least inside of the US, we're still not digital in terms of our healthcare documents. That's still a transition that's happening. I think the US is about a decade behind Europe at this point.
No, but, no, not at all. You've got EHRs. We're still, you know, blackboards and chalk. Come on, Mark, seriously.
But even inside of the EHRs, the I would tell people to interrogate that, because I'm not sure that we're so advanced as people would like to think that we are. But absolutely, the way that we're processing the data will inherently bias it. And I think there needs to be a much better standard for not only how we're processing the data, storing the data, but also how we're collecting the data and how we're qualifying what data actually matters. And I think that this is we're at the very beginning point of real world research that there isn't really good standards for how to do any of those practices. Especially with inside of the qualification piece. And I think that that's actually where the gold is once we understand how to qualify the data, we'll be able to throw out the old practices that bog us down when it comes to how do we go out and acquire that data.
What's interesting is the FDA released a draft guidance document 29th of September, 2021. So just last week. And basically that's saying, if you want to use electronic health records and medical claims data as the source of data for your clinical studies, this is the expectation from reliability, relevance, and quality. So we're already getting into that field. I was on a Clubhouse talk last night and they were talking about this, and what they focused on is the extra work that it causes them. What they're not really seeing is the massive step that the regulator has taken to say, you want us to consider this data. This is the quality, or these are the quality considerations that you then have to put in place. It's gold dust, absolute gold dust. Yeah, it's work. Yeah. Hello, that's called life. Sorry, that's just me. I'll step back. Step back.
I think taking it a step further, though, but those constraints also help clear up the argument and focus on determining which data is actually important. So there's a parallel in my mind when I worked within the physical security industry, and we were trying to help out emergency responders find people with inside of a facility much quicker. The first thoughts that go into people's heads, even in the people in the industry, they think, oh, well, we'll use camera data and try to track where people are. And then the second thought is, oh, we'll use cell phone data to try to understand where people are. Well, it turned out that one of the more elegant solutions is actually to use these really dumb sensors, like the same ones that flip on your lights automatically. They're about 3 cents a piece, right? And just populate buildings with these sensors throughout. You know, those sensors can last 3 to 5 years. You can over-redundant the different pathways that you're putting up these sensors. And what you got was this really clear picture of essentially entities. So you know that there are human bodies with inside of the building, but you don't have a name, you don't have any personal data. So facilities like hospitals, or probably the most regulatory intense buildings in the U.S., schools, now emergency responders can know exactly where the person is that they're supposed to help, but they don't have any of that other data, because all of that other data just bogs down their mission, which is just to get somebody out. And we actually ran tests using this method of collecting only the data that's the most important, which took us a while to figure out how to get there. And we proved that we can reduce an emergency response from 16 minutes plus to under 3 minutes. And to give a reference, 7 minutes is what they call, you know, what we call the lethality zone, where you start to lose people during a fire or some sort of offense. So I think that the regulatory restriction and constraints will actually provide a lot better focus on, okay, what do we actually need in order to validate that we can make a change and that's not going to be harmful, right?
Yes.
So that should be exciting.
Honestly, I've always been an advocate of regulatory compliance, not because it's boring, but because if you know what to comply with, You also know what you don't need to comply with. So you get rid of all of that, like you were saying, you get rid of all the baggage of all the extra information and processes that you never needed. And all of a sudden you have that kind of clarity. Yeah, nice. So would you say that's one of the take-home points when we're looking at this, if we're concluding this podcast? Because what we started with is the statement that marketing firms have been testing metadata and what it means for the physical condition of the consumers for decades, yet we consider the barriers too large and outcomes too small for real-world research. So how do we in the real-world research world learn from the marketing world? What is it we need to do?
I think it's throw out the assumptions and constraints that have guided previous understanding about how to do studies, and understand or accept that there's already proof that we can find to a fairly accurate degree results with inside the large data sets. It's just a matter of understanding and requalifying what data do we actually need. And I think that if we look at it from that lens, we can move things along a lot faster, and it won't seem like so much a constraint as a way of focusing.
Mindset change. Oh, we like to challenge people. And what strikes me is all we're talking about here is pretty much compliance and processes. Well, we haven't even touched on AI. Don't want to get on that route just yet. But you know, that's for another podcast. Well, thank you very much, Mark. Very insightful. And we'll look forward to the next podcast.